The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Okay, right. We have Larissa Nolan and Carl Dieter with us. Roe McDermott will be joining us in a moment to talk about International Men's Day. Now, I know there are people who say every day is a man's day, that they start from a position of privilege, that they enjoy all sorts of advantages over women. Larissa Nolan, do you agree?
No, I don't. I believe that we live in a mostly equal society in that,
but not fully equal.
I would say that the difference being things like we have a few issues still to address on the women's side, a lot of serious issues that don't get much airtime really from the militant feminists of today. Things like dads abandoning mothers and things like domestic violence, things about attitudes towards working mothers in the workplace. All those kind of things still need to be addressed. So we do have those elements, although there also are benefits on our side as well in relation to the motherhood side of things and the fulfilment and the rounder lives that we have compared to men who are quite often just racing up the workplace ladder. And, you know, I find that overall we have actually better lives. You know, when I was...
There's a number of things here, and I don't want to generalise, but I think that that may be an inevitability of what we do this evening. Mm. But there are men who perhaps do not get to see as much of their children as they want because of the career demands made upon them, which perhaps women in a couple decide to step back a little bit from. I'm not saying in all cases, but that may be the case in that. We also have a very serious situation a lot of times when relationships break up and men get excluded from the relationship with their children deliberately, and the courts often endorse that.
That's precisely what I was just trying to articulate there, is those two issues that men spend a lot of the time with the financial burden on them to provide for a whole entire family, which is quite a heavy load to carry, and also those kind of issues definitely men arguably have it more difficult there. Now, when I say we live in an equal society, what I'm saying is we have it better as regards gender equality than we've ever had it before, and we should be actually celebrating that and not constantly finding female disadvantage everywhere, mining for it at this stage to the point where it's turning on people. It's become a thing where if you were to say you're a feminist, you have to put down men at the same time. And in my view, if you're a humanitarian and you truly believe in equality, everybody, you fight for everybody's rights. You don't divide it in between two.
Okay, Carl Dieter, I'll turn to you. Are you a fan of International Men's Day? Do you think it's necessary?
I can't say I'm a fan because I didn't know about it before today. Yeah. So, I mean, disclosure. But I do think...
That is interesting, though, that you wouldn't know about it. I mean, presumably you had heard of International Women's Day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course I have. You see, I suppose the thing is, I mean, I would just say I'm not looking at this to take away from women or even anything to do with women. I just think it's nice to have a day that one in 365 that we celebrate half the population. And I don't see there's anything wrong with that. And I hope it's not done to the detriment of anyone else. I would also look at some of the things that Larissa was saying and just back up the importance of men in society, the importance of fathers in society. I've been looking at some information on the effect of growing up without a dad. And it shows, like, in US prisons, I think half of the people who are in prison grew up without a dad. You're 5 times more likely to commit suicide if you grow up in a fatherless home. 20 times more likely to have behavioral disorders. 9 times more likely to drop out of school. 10 times more likely to have substance abuse issues. 20 times more likely to end up in prison. So I just want to emphasize that rather than celebrate this as some kind of argument between, oh no, women don't have rights, men, you know, are oppressing everyone, to really just say, let's look at the importance of men in society and the great things that we do, and to really focus on a lot of the positive aspects of it rather than look at it to the detriment of anybody. Just celebrate it for what it is.
Yeah, but at the moment, are a lot of men feeling threatened? Do they feel threatened by the sort of the rise of women? Do they feel threatened by the way that they have to show, and this is, I mean, they should show more respect to women, but do they feel that this almost been forced upon them in the workplace, for example?
Well, I was raised somewhat old-fashioned to show a higher level of respect towards women than you would men. And that's not because I'm against equality. I think it is actually a good thing, as what is seen as the physically stronger sex, to show that you can, you know, moderate that, I suppose. So do men feel threatened? Probably. But, you know, men have been dealing with threats ever since men existed. They've always been the main casualty of war. They're 97% of combat fatalities. They're the majority of suicides. We live shorter lives than women. And
why is that? Do we know why that is?
Yeah, they want to die.
Well, you're most likely to die by suicide. I'm saying that as a joke. Well, if you're a man, you're most likely to die by suicide before you're 50 than any other reason. I mean, they're higher risk takers. They're more likely, as I said, I think 2/3 of suicides are committed by men. And then you have addiction problems and all these kind of things. So, yeah, they do have definitely lower life expectancies. But then again, we're built with this kit of reproductive organs that need to be looked after over the course of our lives, and as a result of that, we're in and out of hospitals, we're in and out of clinics and doctors quite a lot more often than men are. So I think as a result, we've learned to take care.
Sorry, that means you catch other illnesses and diseases.
No, catch the presence of them. So we're more likely to have those identified because we're being kind of monitored a little bit more due to the other difficult things that we have to do. For example, give birth, which men obviously don't. But you know, as a result of that, I think we are better monitored with health. And then we're also, the maternal role also makes us, one of the reasons why I would look after my health is that it's a bit like when you're on an airplane, it's like, you know, put on your own mask first before you attend to infants. You have to kind of keep yourself healthy. And I think a lot of the time men tend to go on and they don't necessarily keep an eye on those things, and then that runs into trouble. Like,
yeah, but hold on, and before I bring Roe McDermott in, I mean, if a man complains that he's sick, he's told he's got man flu, it's sort of immediately sort of dismissed as whinging, and men are supposed to grin and bear it, aren't they, Carl?
Yeah, I actually had a case of man flu once and I was complaining about it. My wife kindly reminded me that I was just a big wimp until the week later when she caught it, and then apparently it was the real flu. So it was only man flu when I had it. And I have to admit, as much as I love her, I experienced utter schadenfreude. I was like, good, I'm kind of happy that you're really feeling this one. Serves you right. Where were you when I was saying
as much as I don't like to divide, I do think women are stronger, the stronger sex physically, actually. Yeah, I think we're more resilient. We're able to take things more like that,
so
it seems.
Well, I've seen three kids born, and don't ever. Yeah.
Not even in regards to that. I mean, I think men are reluctant to go to doctors more than women for reasons that you explained, Larissa, but also that idea of they haven't been socialized to ask for help and to admit that they're feeling physically weak or feeling mentally weak. But actually, when women go to the doctor and they say their pain is at, for example, a 7, doctors have actually been trained to treat women as if their pain is at a 4. Yeah. Whereas it doesn't work for men. If men say my pain is at a 7, they're treated like their pain is at a 7. So I actually think it's interesting that men are taken more seriously, but they're not taking advantage of those services. And they're not taking advantage of medical service and mental health services. And it is encouraging men to say, you're allowed to look after yourselves and you're allowed to ask for help.
Yeah, yeah, that's an important thing, yeah.
Bob says, International Men's Day, must ask my wife for my trousers back. That's not a joke. Okay.
Come on, Bob.
Okay, now, Ro, International Men's Day. Do you agree with it as a concept? Is it necessary? Because you've just joined us, and thank you for joining us. There would be people who say that privilege means every day is a man's day. Do better than women. So why give them an International Men's Day?
Because I think on International Men's Day, we can talk about issues that are often overlooked in society. We can encourage men to take a look at issues that, again, are often overlooked, even in their worlds. You know, I think privilege is a very real thing. But also, men are socialized in ways that often prove to be at their disadvantage. So,
what way?
Again, it's not asking for help. It's not being able to express their emotions in an outward way. It's not being able to admit that they're feeling vulnerable. It's not talking about mental health. It's perhaps not even having support systems.
And that ties into the suicide numbers, as presumably, as well, doesn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely, and physical health as well. Like, stress has a huge impact on your physical health. I think men aren't talking about the stresses they're feeling at work, their family lives and their emotional lives. And that takes a real physical toll. So I think encouraging men to speak up about this and having a day where, excuse me, I literally just ran to the studio. This is my health now. I'm not a fit person. But it's encouraging men to talk about these issues that they're not usually encouraged to talk about. It's incredibly important.
Some of your many comments, Brian in Dublin. I'm trained in pain medicine. To state that doctors are trained to disregard the pain symptoms of women is blatantly false and insulting. Eamon says men are faced with a distortion of what many women believe feminism to be. Contorted feminism is the equivalent of chauvinism. It's not equality. I understand the right to equality, but not in a witch hunt.
Are you fighting for equality, or are you just complaining about feminists and that they're ruining what equality is?
Raising kids myself, how dare he insinuate that my kids are less likely to achieve, etc., without having their abusive father? The courts still think access is a given regardless.
That's the issue where we were saying earlier on, Matt, is that that's where women win out. you know, in as regards.
But this woman says she deserves to win out because the man is abusive.
Of course, absolutely, absolutely. That's why the rule is there. Can I just say that's why the courts rule that way? Because you hand a man who's fighting for children quite a lot of the time children for a week, and they don't know what to do with them. So I mean, there's reasons behind it. But then again, there are men who are absolutely genuine who are being punished by that rule. So I mean, there are always exceptions.
Yeah, actually, funny enough,
I need to clarify that statistic though. What I'm not advocating for, and I don't know how someone hear what I say and come to that conclusion. It's absolutely illogical. I'm not advocating for abusive relationships. Get that through your head. I am saying the statistics are that in a fatherless home, your odds of going to prison are higher. That's proven and it's known. I'm sure that that person is a great parent.
Yeah, and that's because fatherless homes generally come from a lower income. That's the link there, obviously.
It's not the only one. It's also about the division of labour. It's about the capacity for extra guidance. It's about the interface time you can spend with the child. It's about all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just to say that we have Larissa Nolan, Roe McDermott with us, Carl Dieter. Before I go to Brent Pope, Carl, just one other thing. Housing, you know an awful lot about the leave for housing. This is a major issue. Separated men tend to be the ones who leave the family home. And finding suitable accommodation for them is a major problem in many relationship breakups, particularly if they're looking for somewhere where they can have the children over.
It is huge. And that actually leads people then to do something which is contrary to what would be in their best interest, which is to actually have to try and support those children through what I think is the correct thing to do, which is have maintenance payments, but then to sometimes try and rent out a place that is bigger than what they need in order to have room for children to stay over when and where they can. And that also leads to them being less well off. Like a fascinating thing, and I said it actually just last week. I was on a TV show and I said that there's important things in wealth is to buy a home, get married, stay married, and get a good education. The buy a home, get married, stay married, that is actually a critical element of it, because when a household splits and splits in two, it doubles the cost of everything. And that then actually reduces lifetime wealth for everybody involved.
And has all sorts of issues, mental health, life expectancy, perhaps. Brent Pope is with us, the former rugby player. Of course, we saw him on our TV screens over the weekend celebrating Ireland's victory over his native country, New Zealand. Brent, thank you very much for joining us. But of course, you've also been a mental health advocate. What do you think of International Men's Day and the issues that it raises?
Well, I suppose I can only really speak from a mental health point of view. And I'm actually, you know, going over to London in a couple of days' time to address 400 or 500 construction workers. So I just see it from the point of view of men's health that, you know, like we're still afraid to talk about what it is to be a man. I think even in this generation that this kind of, I suppose, masculinity that I grew up with, the stereotypical, even when we look at the game of rugby, you know, that I grew up that, you know, real men don't show emotions, you know, harden up, toughen up, man up. Men are reluctant at the best of times to speak about their emotions or go to the doctor or seek help. So really that's what I go around the country just saying, you know, what are we so afraid of as men about showing emotions? Because it's become a killer in this country and in my own. I just lost a friend just recently through the most tragic of circumstances because they didn't reach out for help and get professional help. So I'm not an expert on this field. I have studied in it, but I'm an expert on me, and I've lived with mental health issues and anxiety in particular all my life. So it's really just about saying the message to men if they're in a place that they don't, you know, that they're not used to being, that they're out of their comfort zone mental health wise, to go and seek help, professional help, and get their lives back on track rather than going to a place where, say, they don't understand. Mental health is irrational. We all know that, you know, and people can talk all they like about people taking their own lives and being selfish or not. They just get trapped in a certain part of their lives where they just can't get out of it without help. And it's something that can be momentarily, it can be something that's been going on for a number of years, but it's just really for them to be brave enough, to have the courage enough to seek help and not feel that it makes them less of a man for doing
indeed, less of a man. This is really interesting, Brent. I mean, I suppose there's a couple of points there in particular that I'd pick out of many things that you said there. But the unwillingness to go and seek help is one. And the second thing perhaps is not having people, perhaps friends, that they can open up to and talk to, a male Absolutely. Thing. I mean, and that's one of the reasons why a few years ago we spent a lot of time in this programme talking about the men's sheds, just somewhere where men could go and be together,
exactly.
Do things together and let discussions about honest emotional issues actually come out.
Yes, but they're still reluctant. And Men's Sheds, for instance, is a brilliant organisation, and I applaud them for the work they do. But it's not in our DNA, Matt. It's not in our DNA to talk to strange, because going back to Neanderthal times or reptilian brain, they see other men as threats. So men talking to strangers about, I suppose, what they see is deemed to be over our periods of our generation as a weakness. You know, we all grew up with the fathers that were the strong, silent type that, you know, were the providers in the family, put food on the table, and that was their role. They didn't like to talk about emotions because it felt that it weakened them as a man. And I went through years of guilt and shame, and they're not words I like to use about myself because they're about who you are, and that wasn't the case. But for me to seek help even in a rugby environment where I would be deemed to be strong physically but my mind didn't follow was a hard thing to do, and I couldn't get the help. But I mean, there's no shortage of help out there for those people. They don't have to live in that world anymore. I mean, we're losing men of a certain generation now because of loneliness. You know, the men stuck down in rural Ireland or whatever who maybe don't have the farm to give to anybody, that are not married or something like that, and you know, they just don't see any point in going on, and it's become a travesty in people's life. Rather than just go down, and it's easier for us to go down and get put in plaster or get an ankle strapped up or get an injury looked at, but men aren't going down and simply talking. They don't want to talk to their friends about these kind of issues. And everybody says, oh, yes, you know, have these buddy systems and everything like that. But most men, especially of my generation, don't actually want to open up about feelings because they feel it is perceived as a weakness.
Brent Pope, thank you very much for joining us on The Last Word this evening. Ron McDermott, one of the words that Brent used was masculinity. And there's a word I often hear attached to masculinity these days, and you're laughing because you know what it's going to be, don't you?
Could it possibly be toxic?
Exactly.
Okay, I want to immediately clarify what toxic masculinity refers to, because I talk about toxic masculinity and immediately I get a slew of people saying, oh, you're saying that men are terrible, or are you saying you hate men? That's absolutely not the case. If that was the case, I'd just be talking about masculinity. But toxic masculinity refers to these behaviours and these ideas that we've normalised that say that men's only worth is in domination. And so that means in terms of their professional and their wealth capacity, they want to accumulate as much power as possible. That means socially, they always want to be powerful. In their relationships, they want to be the dominant person. And it means in terms of emotion, they don't want to express that in case they'd be perceived as weak. And in case you've noticed, a lot of those things are basically being dominant or being more powerful than what we often perceive as being feminine. But this idea of toxic masculinity, they accumulate, and they mean that men are constantly in competition with each other, they're constantly in competition with women and trying to assert their power over women, and it can result in toxic behaviours, including like aggression, including, you know, not being empathetic or being aggressive in your relationships and your personal relationships, or not being caring. So that's what we mean when we talk about toxic masculinity. It's not masculinity, and I think International Men's Day is so important because we need to expand our definition of what masculinity includes so that men get to be fully rounded human beings. They get to express themselves in different ways and not just ways that we have deemed to be powerful.
Larissa Nolan.
So, I mean, just the only problem is with the whole toxic masculinity thing is that really what it comes down to, it's almost like as if the only thing acceptable in masculinity is if you're feminine. It's like, otherwise, then, you know, anything masculine seems to be loaded into.
I don't think that's what Rob was.
No, that's exactly what I just said.
No,
we need to expand.
I know what you're saying. What I'm saying is, though, if you break it down and you tick off all the things that you're not supposed to be under the toxic masculinity category, that what you're basically left with is as a woman. So, you know.
No, it's not.
I think it's fairness. Sorry, I come here, Rob. I mean, I think, for example, being masculine is all about showing respect for women. It's not, I mean, we see, for example, today, Irish Times website at the moment, top 10 most read stories. One is about International Men's Day. Three of them are horrific rape stories as well.
Yeah.
Being a man means that you have respect for women, so you don't sexually abuse them. Yeah.
I actually think that is
properly.
Quite insulting that you're saying that there's no definition of masculinity.
I know, you find everything I say insulting. And if I was to find people insulting who said things to me, I'd be insulted every single day of my
life.
But
you're saying that there's no definition of masculinity that means being masculine.
I'm just going to finish what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that a lot of the time it's involved removing everything that is masculine from
the definition.
Okay, no, I'm just going to go back to this, right? So what I'm saying is that the two words that struck at me from what Brent was saying was not toxic, or not masculinity, toxic or otherwise. It was guilt and shame. They were the two things that he mentioned that really stood out to me. And the problem with this is that, I mean, a lot of the conversation we're having around men at the moment, it's like a lot of it's like kind of built around the narrative of some kind of war on men. You know, so we're hearing phrases all the time. The conversation is constantly disparaging things like, you know, it's like we're hearing almost like, you know, when we talk about rape, it's like lumping all men are rapists, you know, and it's like toxic masculinity. No, clearly a very, very, very small percentage. Men rape more often, obviously, but only a tiny percentage. But what the narrative is getting through a lot of the time is all men are rapists, toxic masculinity, another phrase, straight white male. It's all very, very negative. For young men growing up today, that kind of guilt and shame, I mean, I think if we're really serious about everybody getting on together and mental health around men and young men, we have to be very careful of constantly pushing this message.
Here's a very disturbing text from a listener. I've been sexually abused by two different men as a child. I've been raped as an adult. I'm a woman and I've never considered all men as perverts or rapists, just the ones I know are. Another one here. As an anonymous male in a workplace that is correcting equality, I get told verbally not to apply for roles as they need to be filled by females for gender equality. Where is the equality in that? This comes to the role man as a provider. Role. Mm. This, I suppose, is something as well that some men seem to be struggling with, not just being the financial provider for a family, but they say they've all the additional things that they are now required to be as well. Any sympathy with that?
Yeah, and I think it is a confusing time for men because obviously women had like lacked certain rights in terms of being able to own homes and being able to work, particularly if you're in the civil service after you got married. So that has changed incredibly quickly. So men have going from being raised to think you are going to be the main breadwinner in the house. You have to be the provider. You have to bring in all the money. And then those roles are shifting and they're shifting quite quickly. And I think there is a game of catch up being played. And absolutely, that is a confusing thing. And I think that's why it's important for men to be able to talk to each other and to seek out therapy if they need it or seek out other support systems. And also to talk to women, because I think there can be this combative nature of I can't talk about this. But it's only through dialogue that these things are going to become more clear. And it's only through these that men are going to understand what their role should be now or could look like. I think it's that lack of opportunity that men have been presented with. Like, maybe you don't have to earn more than anyone else in your household. Maybe you could put in more of the emotional labour in the household. Maybe you could look after the kids. But again, because this hasn't been how we've socialised men, it is confusing. But I think it's through dialogue that we get over these hang-ups and we understand that there are more opportunities for men out there.
Carl Dieter.
That may change. I mean, we're seeing, for instance, in third level education, 55% of women, this is CSO statistics I'm talking about now from 2016, 55% of people in further education are women, only 43% are men. But men are working more hours. I think this idea
a lot of that comes down to, sorry, just to interrupt, there is a thing, a gap, particularly sort of 35 to 45 and whatever, where women drop out of the workforce to have children, to mind children. The men stay in the workforce and then women find it difficult to get back in.
Yeah.
And that has all sorts of knock-on implications for women reaching top positions in organisations.
We should really discuss things like the child, you know, having a children gap rather than necessarily a gender gap. But I would also say that, and it's an uncomfortable thing to talk about the way things used to be and the way they might be in the future. I actually don't know many stay-at-home dads. And I'll tell you why. I actually think for a lot of men, providing for their families is not just a work endeavor. It's actually a spiritual one. I believe that a lot of dads can be quite happy to provide financially and maybe is not as much emotionally, and they can feel fulfilled. Whereas I think a lot of women, if they were to just provide financially and not emotionally, wouldn't feel as fulfilled. And that's why they will often choose, by their choice, not by someone else, to actually drop out of the workplace. And that's not fulfilled norms. I don't believe that we can get to this point in what is an obvious part of human evolution and not think that certain traits aren't completely bound into our genetics.
Well, I think if paternity leave, for example, was more common than maternity leave, or at least more equal, then we could see if that was playing out. But it's not at the moment, so those opportunities are limited.
That's a load of nonsense, because, I mean, anybody who's ever had and raised children, what we realise is it's a much more colossal job than you ever imagine it could ever be. So then when you get into it, I have the masses of respect for the male as a provider, because I don't have that in my own life. So, and I can really see the difference between how how women are supported by men when, you know, when you need to do this thing that is actually fundamental to a lot of our existence. But the other side is that when you go back into work, this is something that's never talked about. The paternity, paying men for 6 weeks for paternity when they go and they probably just hang around the house and get under your feet probably a lot of the time and then they go back to work. That's not really, it's not going to change the world. What will change the world, though, is welcoming women back into the workplace. Stop punishing them for having to go and collect children or maybe they have to go home to a sick child, and change the complete attitude, which is actually quite hostile to women when you return to the workplace. I find that deeply hypocritical of companies who claim to be feminist.
Why the assumption that it's always the mother who has to go and collect mostly the sick child?
It mostly is.
Yeah. But it necessarily
shouldn't
be. No,
the sick child wants you to collect them.
Well, is it the question that the man might find it more difficult to explain at work that he has to go home and collect a sick child?
No, the woman gets hassled as well. Can I just say that's absolutely... And I mean, I even see women at other child dental appointments and they're all sitting there going, oh God, I have to get back. I'm under such pressure. The boss raised his eyes to heaven, or usually her eyes to heaven. And, you know, you're just there going, why are we doing this to women when they're trying to raise the next generation and have a career? See, we should be supporting them.
That problem didn't exist in the past because, as Ro said, women were basically turfed out of work whether they wanted to be or not. I think that was wrong. But what survived was women went into the workforce, but what survived was this view of someone somewhere has to be, you know, your kids have to be invisible. Like, our whole view of children within the system is a really weird one. The school year is designed to mess up working parents to the greatest extent possible. And we will never have a discussion about the school year because you can't.
You know, we will. You've actually just given me an idea for something we will do in this program.
Can I go to that one?
Do you want the last word in this, Ro?
I think that's interesting. I think it's dangerous to assume that men are going to get underfoot, or men, you know, they can't have a spiritual journey in the same way being with their children or hanging around the children, because historically we just don't have the evidence to say that is so, and we don't have the evidence of giving men those opportunities.
Well,
to prove
I would
us
say
wrong.
Human evolutionary and history is a pretty good proof of it. Like, that,
but we
that's
haven't
the role
had,
that was
but we,
always there. I'm not saying it couldn't exist.
Yeah,
but
it hasn't been the reverse, is what I'm saying. Like, men haven't been
successful.
Said,
evolution
go into
relied
the home
on
and be the.
You
like,
want to have
I'm standing for men, and I'm role standing for men here now. This is definitely a change.
I've never not stood up for men. I've stood up for women.
I'm glad to see.
And the fact that you think that is combative.
I'm joking.
All right, listen, thank you all very much. Ro McDermott, Larissa Nolan, Carl Dieter, thank you all very much for being with us on The Last Word here on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.